Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
In an action that some say could set the region alight, the US and UK have launched these military strikes now against Houthi rebels in Yemen, who've been attacking shipping in the Red Sea. The US Air Force confirmed that more than 60 targets at 16 locations were hit. The Houthi leader warned that this was the greatest folly in Britain and America's history and threatened to deal a powerful blow in retaliation. Well, since the beginning of the Israel-Gaza war, Houthi rebels who are backed by Iran have attacked 27 ships in the region. Well, I'm joined now in the studio by Chris Reynolds, who's former director of the Irish Coast Guard and former head of the EU crisis mission to Somalia, and on the line by Dr. Patrick Bury, defence and security expert at the University of Bath. And you're both welcome. Thank you for joining us on the programme. Chris, it was the Labour Party MP, John McDonnell, this morning who said that this could set the region alight. Do you share those concerns given what happened overnight?
No, I don't really. I think this was inevitable. I think what you see here is you have the Houthis trying to, I suppose, get some dominance in the Shia conversation about the future of Shiism and the Muslim world. And this is very much localized, I think. It is Iran behind it all. Iran is supplying the weapons, supplying the missiles. Houthis are adapting them, just like Iran is buying Hezbollah and Hamas.
Mm-hmm. Didn't we see in 2015 when the Saudis took on the Houthis and the power that they were met with in response, that these people are very well armed and very well organized? So there is an element of danger and risk when you take them on.
Yes, they're good fighters. But it is a clan. They are a clan. They're not a nation. They're not a state. They are a clan system within the territory of Yemen that has managed to capture the capital and a good part of the northwestern territory. But there's plenty of Yemen that is not under their control. Mm-hmm. So they are, this is what I'm saying, they are trying to put themselves in a position that they are the voice of Islam, the voice of Shia, in this area of the world.
And given what was happening then in the Red Sea with the attacks on the shipping lanes, do you think that the international community had any choice?
Not really. I think there was three possibilities that they could have done. One is to create convoys, to escort convoys through the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. The second is to put territorial dominance, basically put blocks down the coast of Yemen that they would dominate. And I think coming off that, they would engage. But these are short-term options. Mm-hmm. You cannot maintain these options. They are short-term. The only long-term option is to disrupt the supply chain from Iran and go after that with SIGINT and HUMANINT eventually with kinetic activity, or go after the command and control and go after their launch sites and maintenance sites. And really, that's the only option they had left to them.
Okay, and this was the option that they took. So, Patrick, to hear from you on this, were you surprised that it came to this at this point? Would you have expected this to happen, but perhaps not quite so soon?
Good morning, Claire. No, the opposite. In fact, I was surprised they waited so long. I think the West basically tried to do everything they could here to avoid doing this, you know, cognizant of the fact that it could escalate. And their main aim in this whole region at the moment is to constrain things and keep it under control. So, no, I was actually surprised they didn't do it a bit earlier.
What about the fallout then and the concern that this could spark a retaliation that might drag us into a place where we don't want to be?
This is about Iran, as you know, Chris has said as well. And essentially, they've got a choice now. They've been a malign actor in the Middle East for 40 years, especially for the last 20 years. They've played a bad security hand fairly well. They've got proxies now, or allied militias, in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Gaza, and now the Houthis in Yemen, which it was an opportunity which was presented to them by the Yemeni civil war, which they've exploited. Their question is, what do they want from this? How far are they going to push it? We saw yesterday they boarded and seized an oil tanker further north off Oman. That's near the Strait of Hormuz, and that's another major shipping point which the Iranians do often use some activity to put under pressure. So that is the focus I would be looking at for the next step, to see, does Iran try something there? They usually try something sub-threshold, you know, something that is intimidatory, but is below the threshold for a major escalation. So I'd expect something like that, potentially maybe some missiles fired, more missiles fired at Israel from the Houthis, etc. But it's about really Iran's next move now on this, if they wanted to escalate.
Chris?
Yeah, there's a double whammy here coming from shipping. So the San Nicolas, which is the vessel hijacked by Iran in the Gulf of Oman yesterday, that had been in a previous life arrested by the US Coast Guard and fined for breaking the sanctions against Iran. So this could have, and then the Iranians are now saying this is now owned by the Americans. So this is a retaliation against that. So that could be quite limited in what that is about. But we don't know yet. There's also the rise of the piracy of the basin of Somalia. So we've seen now merchant vessels being taken in piratic attacks by pirates. So from the merchant...
And that had settled down for a time,
hadn't
it?
Oh, yeah, that was my job in Somalia to settle that down, and it had settled down. I'm not saying because I'm back here now, it's
you have to
back.
Go back.
No. I'm in Malaysia now, so I'm quite happy looking after pirates in Malaysia rather than in Gulf of... basin of a Somali basin.
But the resurgence of the Somali pirates, is that directly related to what's been happening in the Red Sea?
You could say it is related simply as opportune. They see the chaos and it's now opportune that the world is looking elsewhere. Shipping has lowered its standards when it comes to counter piracy and that sort of stuff. So it's an opportunity and it will be seen in good light in the Muslim world. So just like the original piracy was seen in good light in Somalia because it was countering illegal fishing, this can be seen in good light because it's obviously related to what's happening in Gaza.
Patrick, when we look ahead then to what might happen over the weekend, President Biden has been very clear saying that he won't hesitate to order more action to make sure that these ships can get through. Do you expect us to hear more news on this front from there in the coming days?
I think, and the UK has said that there's no plans for another strike immediately. I think there'll be a soak period, what they say in the military, to sit and wait and see what happens. They'll want to do their battle damage assessment. So they know they struck the targets. They'll want to get an assessment of how significantly. The targets they're trying to hit, Claire, are basically a lot of mobile cruise missile launchers, smaller sites that might be used to launch drones. They're hard enough to identify depending on the size of the drone, and anywhere that's stockpiling munitions, command and control centers. So they've hit those targets. They'll want to see what's the effect on the Houthis after that, and crucially, what do the Houthis do? If the Houthis go for another barrage, then it's going to be simply tit-for-tat barrages. And of course, these will be as targeted as they can be. But as you start to run through the targeting cycle, the damage spreads out, of course, into the civilian infrastructure, etc., like that.
But it remains contained at that tit-for-tat level. But that's dependent on what Iran decides to do.
Exactly. There's a strategic game of 3D chess going on here. You could argue the West is already in basically a knife fight sub-threshold, which, you know, the populations aren't really cottoning onto, and I'm not even sure the leaders in some places are. But
Chris is saying cost here to us.
Sorry, I was just trying to say what will affect us almost straight away is that, say, a ship is coming from Mumbai in India to Dublin. Mm-hmm. It would take normally 26 days. And so we're paying for the cost of 26 days of transport. Now it's going to take 44 days. On one ship, that's $500,000 extra. So that $500,000 has to be passed on to consumers.
Absolutely.
And as well as that, because it takes longer, you're going to need more ships and more crews, and they have to take out more insurance. And again, that will all be passed down the supply chain to us.
Yeah, but they have no choice at the moment, those shipping companies.
No, absolutely not. No.
Sorry, Patrick, go ahead. We interrupted you there.
No. And that's exactly one thing that it would do. And Chris has got the expertise on that more than I would from the military angle. I was just saying basically that the potential for this to escalate is dependent on this, what the Houthis and what Iran basically choose to do next. Mm-hmm. The strategic context, and exactly like what Chris is saying, in there's a whole bunch of people who are now trying, if you think about it, there's a major war in Ukraine. There is a major war in Gaza. There's a developing situation in the with the Houthis, which is crossing over from sub-threshold into threshold. You've got a big question over what the Chinese are going to do in Taiwan. And these nations, Iran, Russia and China, are they share mutual interests and they do coordinate a bit and dependent on what the region is they're in. But what's happening at the strategic level is an emerging pattern of stretching the West in different places between mutual interest and coordination, and this and other actors then seeing that they've got an opportunity, like the Somali pirates, to exploit and increasing violence again. So we're in a period where
this
things are really up in the air.
Doesn't suit China at all.
Say again, Chris?
Sorry, this does not suit China at all.
Mm-hmm. Explain why you say that.
Okay, so China is big into shipping. It has a lot of major ports. It runs, so Djibouti is run by China. If you take large Chinese ships, or ships carrying Chinese goods, go up through the Red Sea, up through the canal, it will go then to the big Greek transshipment ports, which are Chinese. They will break down those cargoes into small cargoes, onto small ships, and then feed all the small ports in the Mediterranean. That is a major industry for China. That is now disrupted. Mm-hmm. This does not suit China.
Mm-hmm. But there's no sign of China coming in to try and sort it out. They're not going to touch this.
You'll not see them. Mm-hmm. You'll not see them or hear them, but they're there.
Patrick?
No, I was just going to say, this particular, like anything that affects shipping isn't really in China's interest. But on the other hand, what you find is that there's a whole massive stockpile of Chinese weapons being uncovered in Gaza recently. Now, obviously, they came probably through the Iranians, but it does go to show you the level of mutually overlapping interest in them times coordination, which is going on in this basically what is emerging into a bit of a strategic knife.
And Patrick, there has been a lot of talk and analysis around how diminished the United States is becoming and has become. And the same, of course, for the UK. Perhaps this was the moment where they make this show of strength. Like I read this morning, some of the commentary around this suggesting it's a pivotal moment for Rishi Sunak.
I think, given that there's been a few red lines that have been crossed, especially, you remember, in Syria and the chemical weapons used by Assad, and nothing was done, I think it is a bit of a red line. I think there was a growing perception that basically the world outside the West is in decline, militarily can't win wars, politically very fractured. Obviously, some of that has been stoked by malign actors abroad. But this will be seen, I think, as an attempt. But it depends what the ultimate effect is in the longer run. Mm-hmm. I think what's more important, you know, like just to put it in context, the US military has 11 aircraft carriers. You know, I think China is about to launch its third, if it can. And it doesn't even have the capability in terms of the whole piece around a weapon or an aircraft carrier, which needs to be put in place to make it function correctly. So, you know, it remains a very, very potent military force. If it came to it, I think the US could actually destroy and pretty much or heavily degrade the Iranian military, especially the IRGC. So it's still very potent. The big risk to the US, of course, is November 2024 and what's going on politically back there. Because
yes,
if you don't have a functioning political system, your military obviously starts to turn inward.
But you don't see this getting to the point where it is the US versus Iran.
I can definitely see a pathway to that, Claire, unfortunately, yeah. I think, you know, Iran, as I said, has played a bad hand very badly over years. But what you see, it's a very malign actor in the region. And I think it wouldn't just be the US, actually. I think there'd be heavy diplomatic pressure for some of the Gulf states who've had problems with Iran for a long period to join in.
But how much in control in reality does Iran have over the Houthi rebels?
That is a question that remains difficult to answer. But what I can say is there's open source reporting on commanders in the IRGC have set up the training facilities for the Houthis. They've brought at least 200 Houthi rebels in to do naval training at some of their academies. And there remains a decent enough level, we think, of command and control over them. Now, whether that goes all the way up to sort of strategy it remains to be seen. But I think my sense is it's obviously it's far less than they have over Hezbollah, which is basically their own force. Yeah. But it's also... It's also still got some control there.
Okay, Chris, can I come back to the disruption that this is causing? Because we saw this report this morning that Tesla now has announced that it's suspended operations in Berlin at two factories there, manufacturing, because they can't get the parts that they need from China. And I suppose it's a very real playing out of the impact of this that we see now. Do you expect that to be replicated as this continues?
I think when you saw Lee Evergreen getting stuck in the Suez Canal, that was a sudden shock to the system. And it took industry to adapt to that took it 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. It's the same here. Industry will adapt. There's no shortage of shipping. There's actually a glut of shipping at the moment. So the industry has to adapt to this new reality. It will take 2, 3 weeks, maybe a month. The supply chain then has to basically ready itself. So that's 2, 3 months. Mm-hmm. So no, it will fix itself.
But that won't be without cost, as you said.
It will add... the scenario of, I told you about the Chinese vessel going up into Greece to transship, the extra cost there is twice that. So you're talking about over a million per ship extra cost for that, just that one.
Okay. Thank you both, Chris Reynolds, and also to Dr. Patrick Bury. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.